Harp on Sports with Seth Harp.
You know what time it is.
3, 2, 1.
Let's do this.
Go, bartenders! Your food needs refill.
Harp on Sports, the bar, podcast, media, audio, and radio network. What do we have in store for you on this edition of the program? A little Gators gulp, a gaffe heading into the SEC basketball tournament as they lay a pretty big egg at Vandy. And all that momentum dead in its tracks? Yeah, maybe. Team was riding high, won 9 out of 12. The games that they did lose, they lost at A&M. They were losing good games, if you consider good losses. At Alabama, at South Carolina, not a good loss, the way they lost against Vandy. So, course correction, and the loss to Vandy didn't really affect them standing-wise, seating-wise. They're going to be a 6 no matter what. But something else took place that does affect them, so we're going to look at that. Also, Big Bucks Baker, man. Baker Mayfield. Less than a week after Mike Evans signs a big 2-year deal. Baker Mayfield in the clubhouse 3 years, $100 million. What it means for the Bucks going forward and why this makes sense. Why it was the smart thing to do. Although the Bucks do have some concerns, but not next year. So we'll dive into that as well. And also, clown shoes on the bayou. As Kim Mulkey embarrasses herself, LSU, with her actions following the LSU-South Carolina game. Dawn Staley shows you how to handle things. Kim Mulkey shows you how to be a circus act. How about that, baby? There you go. Harp on Sports, the bar, podcast, media, audio, radio network. Follow, share, like, subscribe. At Harp on Sports Twitter, at Harp on Sports Instagram. Harp on Sports Auditory Route, Buzzsprout, Spotify, Apple Podcast. Harp on Sports Facebook page. Harp on Sports YouTube channel. And of course, harponsports.com. Florida Gator basketball. Yikes. Whoops. Talked about this at the beginning of the week. We did. Midweek last week, I should say. Win against Alabama. The swagger was there, all right. The game really didn't mean too much against Vandy. This team struggles on the road against average teams, struggles at home against average teams. And after the big win over Alabama, you knew they were going to have a letdown, and they did in a big way. Yikes. So what does it do? Here's what it does. Florida had a chance, depending on their SEC trek, to get to that 4 or 5 seed range. Not now. What this does is it sets them back a seed. So if they would have navigated the SEC tournament and somehow won the sucker, they're going to be a 4 or 5. Now they'll be a 5 or 6. It hurts them seeding-wise. They were a 6, according to Lenardi, 7, according to Palm, going into Saturday. Now they're a 7 or an 8. You lose in the first round, now you're a 9 or a 10. If they lose to the Mizzou-Georgia winner, they could end up down there at that 11 seed line. Probably not, but a 10 seed line. It's a world of difference. Having to worry about the Arizonas and the North Carolinas of the world, the Baylors of the world, the Iowa States of the world in the second round, as opposed to having to worry about the Creightons, the way Kansas is playing. There's a gigantic difference between being a 6 and a 7. Gigantic difference. And this loss, if they'd have beat Vandy, they'd be sitting there strong on the 6 line. As long as they won a game in the SEC tournament, they'd have stabilized themselves as a 6. If they would knock off Alabama, then probably move themselves up to a 5, have a chance to navigate the sucker, maybe even get all the way to a 4. The way they've been playing down the stretch, they'd have gone something like 15-3 their final 18 games, but the Vandy loss, oof. Now, look, they can still go through this thing and navigate this thing, but that's an ugly loss. And what it does is it makes it really hard to get above that 7 line. To get back up there above the 6 line, what would they have to do? Going to have to beat the Georgia-Mizzou winner, then going to have to beat Alabama again. There'll probably be a 7 or 8 in terms of bracketology, probably an 8 after the loss to Vandy. Should be an 8. Then they beat Mizzou. Beat Georgia? Okay, we'll give you a 7. You beat Alabama? Okay, we got you back up into 6 range. You beat Kentucky? Okay. Losing to bad teams. And this team, just now what do they do when they get themselves on a neutral site? We'll see. But they're a tournament team. The question is, where are they going to be? A loss to in the early rounds of the SEC tournament, they're going to be a 10 seed. With a win, they probably put themselves at a 7 or an 8. Stabilize at a 7 or an 8. But remember, there's going to be teams losing and climbing this bubble left and right. Good teams falling down. Florida gets beat. Bad teams moving up. You got to win. Florida, to me, if they win 2 games in this sucker, are going to be a 7 seed. They win three, they're going to be a six. They win four, they're going to be a five, which means the trek to get there would be what? More than likely, Georgia, Bama, Kentucky, Tennessee. It's a tough road. And I give Kentucky credit. I said a week ago, there's two teams I don't think that Florida can beat in the SEC tournament. Kentucky was one of them. Tennessee's the other. And Kentucky proved it. Kentucky's getting hot at the right time. So what do you do now you're Florida? Well, again, you get the 11-14 winner. Then you get Bama, who you've had success against. You got to feel good if you're Florida to get to the semifinals of this thing. You do. You're in position to get to the semifinals. And then it'll come to an end against Kentucky. And that's fine. That's fine. But Kentucky was sitting there, could have been a sixth seed, depending on how things worked as the week. And remember, they had that close game against Vandy. And everyone said, oh my God, look, they don't look very good. They struggled against Vanderbilt, and they flipped the switch. Difference is Florida struggled against Vanderbilt and lost. Kentucky struggled and still won. And then went on the road and won at Tennessee, something I don't think Florida could do. If you're Todd Golden, you got a chance here. Looking at it right now, what? The one seed's Tennessee. Two seed is Kentucky, three seed's Bama, then you got 4-5 South Carolina, Georgia, or South Carolina, Georgia, excuse me, South Carolina, Georgia, oh, come on, South Carolina at Auburn, and then Florida sitting there as the six. What do I think? I think Florida beats Mizzou or beats Georgia. I think Florida beats Alabama, and then they lose to Kentucky. I have a tough time seeing this not go chalk. I don't see any way like LSU beats Kentucky. It'll be interesting to see like the Auburn South Carolina winner going up against Tennessee. But I think Tennessee sits back. They get the Auburn South Carolina winner. And that, I mean, I just see them cruising, man. I do. Well, they got to take on the 8-9 first, but come on. And then they get the, so who do they get? They get A&M and then Tennessee gets A&M, and then they get what, South Carolina or Auburn? Then they get Kentucky. So Tennessee, and look, Tennessee's in one of those weird positions. Tennessee has to win the conference if they want to be a one seed. Because if Tennessee doesn't win the conference and North Carolina wins the ACC, Tennessee will fall to a two line. So it's going to be fun to watch this go down. Here's what's at stake again for Florida. A win, you know, the loss takes them down to an eight seed. A win over Mizzou or Georgia puts them at a seven. A win over Bama puts them at a six. I think a win over Kentucky puts them in a weak five, and then a win over Tennessee would put them in a strong five or a weak four in terms of seedings. So they could move up three, four slots. They could be, if they get beat right away, they could be a 10. I think it could be as high as a five. Five? So these tournaments don't matter. Yeah, they do. You bet they do. Because at that point, you could point to the Vandy game and go, that was an anomaly. This team down the stretch has been balling. They're 14-4 in their last 18 games, including wins over Auburn, Alabama twice, Kentucky twice. See? So, yeah, a lot at stake for the Gators this week. What do I think is going to happen when it's all said and done? I think I told you. I don't see any way that I think it's Kentucky and Tennessee in this sucker again. I thought there was a chance, you know, depending on, you know, if Tennessee would have beat Kentucky, Kentucky would have been a four, and then you'd had Kentucky and Tennessee play again, and there's a way for Florida to sneak into the sucker. Not now. Okay. So Gators, still fine. Could be as bad as a 10. Could work their way up to a 5. All right. That's how big this tournament is. What do I think they're going to be? I think they're going to end up being a 7. 6 or 7. Very weak 7. Or very weak 6, strong 7. It depends on what other teams do too. 2 wins, 6 or 7. Let's see here. How about this? Baker Mayfield. The Buccaneers did what they needed to do to run it back. They win the division. They win a home game. Okay, what do? They're going to run it back. And sometimes that's what you need to do. And the Bucs need to start building through the draft. And they're in a very rough spot cap-wise these next 2 years. And they've got their two studs. Now, Godwin, I look at the mess he's going to be, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But, you know, Mike Evans, essentially, cap money, 7, 23, and 13. So I look at that and say, wait, what? Yeah. He signed a 2-year deal, but $21 million is coming out on the back end. He won't even be on the team. Or he may be on the team if they re-up him some more. But these void years, boy, oh boy, it's really paying off a credit card with another credit card. We'll get to that. It's spending money you don't have. I'll make that money. Then the thinking is the cap's going to go up, so we'll just be able to cover our bases. The cap's going to go up, and you may say, well, if other teams are financially responsible, yeah, but they're not. Other teams do the same thing. So when you're in a division with the Saints, the Falcons, and the Panthers, Panthers are not a threat for another year. The Falcons, depending on what they do at quarterback, which I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback, if they go out and trade for Justin Fields, they could be a threat. They could be a real legitimate threat. If the Falcons would do something along the lines of draft, you know, they got Kyle Pitts. They've got some weapons up there. They got a good running back. They've got a good receiver. If they could come out and shore up that offense, maybe shore up that defense a little bit, they bring Justin Fields in, they could do some damage. And that's who the biggest threat to them could be, the Bucs next year. The Saints, okay. I don't know what to tell you about the Saints other than, you know, Derek Carr, I mean, they're in salary cap Hades for the next 3 years. So if you're the Bucs, you should go 10-7 and win this division again next year. You should. And you've got a Hall of Fame receiver. You've got your franchise quarterback now. And what you do is you're treading water as you try to navigate this salary cap situation that you're in. Next year, they'll get a little relief. And then the next year, they'll get a lot of relief. And Baker's last year, Mike Evans did him a solid. And this is about fancy cap number because he gets the same money up front. This is where you need an owner that cuts bonus checks, which the Glazers do. Almost every one of them has to do it now. It's how you keep your guys around. It's how you're able to manipulate the cap, cash on hand. So 3 years, $100 million, $30 million guaranteed up front. What's it, a $24 million cap hit or $18 million cap hit? $30 million next year, 25, $20 million is guaranteed. So $50 million of this is guaranteed. So essentially what it is, it's a 2.5-year deal. Evans got a 2.5-year deal, 3-year deal. Although a lot of the hard money's coming out of the back end. And what's the thought process with that? Well, the thought process with that is there's going to be transitions years in there. You draft well and you're good to go. And that's the key. You got to have about 5 guys on your roster that are a good solid nucleus. And then one of them's got to be quarterback. And then you draft well. And the Bucs need to draft well. And they have drafted okay the last 4 or 5 years. You need to draft well. Chiefs have drafted extremely. I mean, the Chiefs have been the best team in the league the last 5, 6 years drafting. So have the Ravens. Ravens have been really good. The Eagles were really good. Not so much anymore. Last year, the Rams were really good. Last 2 years, the Rams have been really good. That's why they've rebuilt that sucker. They have. The Jags got good there for a little while. But oof. So this is next. 24 and 25. And they always can bring, at that point, Mike Evans and some guys back. But the thing that they got cooking against them is Godwin in 25 is an $18 million cap hit. He's not even going to be on the roster. It's a void year. So that's a lot of money. It's one thing when you have, like, you know, in 2 years, Mike Evans is a $13 million void. So this team's going to have $31 million of back-ended voided contracts on guys that aren't going to be there in 2 years. So you got guys that are franchised. You got to move some money around. I was trying to figure this, you know, the franchise is stabilized. There's guys that, you know, you could redo Godwin's deal. But then you're talking about, I guess you could, you know, it's $18 million void. He'd be like a 20, you'd pay him $5 million up front. He'd be like a $25 million cap hit. But Godwin already is a $26 million cap hit this year. Godwin's a $26 million cap hit this year. And then you have to ask yourself, okay, I fully expect the Bucs now to draft a receiver in one of the first 2 rounds in the hopes of replacing Chris Godwin. Or you could tear his deal up and do a deal similar to what you did to Mike Evans, where the money's in the 3rd year of the deal. That way, when Mike Evans' deal is running out, Godwin's is kicking in, if you think he's the heir apparent. No, the Bucs have a 2-year window here. 2-year window of this nucleus. And they're going to have to draft well these next 2 years as well. And think about it. You were just a drive away from going to the NFC Championship game. Then you look, the 49ers are going to have to pay Brock Purdy coming up here. And the Lions are okay financially, but they're going to have to shell out some money for Jared Goff here in the next. They're going to have to pay him and that new young nucleus together. You look at the rest of the NFC without Kelsey, who knows what Philly's going to be. Look at your division winners. Those are your division. The Packers are going to be coming on strong. So you got a little bit of a window here. Your division's garbage. So you have a chance to really, really shuffle some dollar signs around and make a run out of here. But the Bucs essentially with this group got a 2-year window. And then they're going to have to reestablish some things. Where the Chiefs were a couple years ago, where they'd trade Tyreek Hill, and you see teams have to do this. Okay, we got to reshuffle this a little bit. Patriots did that after they won those Super Bowls at the beginning. It's like, okay, we got to let a lot of these defensive guys go. We can't afford to sign them anymore. And then after 2 years, they drafted really well. And then they're like, okay, what do we do? Okay, we got to sign Randy Moss. We got to bring some guys in. And then you had veterans coming in taking massive discounts, like Junior Seau and those guys taking discounts so they could be a part of it. We'll see. So there you go on that front. But look, the Bucks should win that division. Of all the teams next year in the NFC, I look at the divisions. I mean, the Rams, what the Rams have done in the Niners, that'll be a tight division. Should be better. The Lions and the Packers will be a great division. The East, the Cowboys and Philly will be good. The division that I'm the most confident in the team winning now is the Bucks. Bucks the favorite in that division. Oh, on a side note, other team in Florida, the Jags trading for Mac Jones. It's a 6th-round pick. Look, the chances, I've seen this happen. The Jags love to draft quarterbacks in the 6th round. They bring him into camp and they cut him. This is a guy that'll be your backup quarterback that's a 6th-round pick for a year. And if he, you know, if you draft a quarterback on the practice squad or something comes along, and here's what the Jags are thinking too with this. Quarterback goes down and somebody needs a quarterback, they'll give you a 3rd-round pick for the Jags. Jags brought him in as a 6th to flip him into a 3rd. And the way that Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, maybe he starts. It's a smart move. It's a wise move for the Jags. Wanted to wrap with this. I see, you know, everybody loves bracketology at this time of the year. And I hope that the women's committee is smart enough to make Iowa's going to be a 1 seed, but to put LSU as the two seed in that region. Don't anticipate that these two teams are going to meet and get in the Final Four. You've got to get Iowa and LSU together. You're going to have plenty of time to get the other big ones in there. Iowa, South Carolina, LSU, maybe South Carolina. You've got to get, I know the thought's going to be, we've got to get Caitlin Clark to the Final Four and LSU could beat him. Come on. We got to get that matchup again. I said last year, if women's college basketball were smart, the opening game this year in Madison Square Garden would have been Iowa-LSU. Didn't do it. Come on, committee. You got to get this set up. A little bit of a curveball, and this is what happened with LSU on Sunday. Look, I went back and I looked at this, and you have Angel Reese pulling this Cardozo, you know, lady's hair, girl's hair, and then this Cardozo shoving the girl from LSU after the hard foul at the end, near the end of the game. And look, it's one of these things that it's a black guy. No. These things happen in men's sport, men's basketball. It happens. The problem I have is Kim Mulkey. I do. Big problem. I thought Dawn Staley was great afterwards. We got to be better than that. Last year's team was a veteran team. This year's just not mature enough. That can't happen. Apologized for what happened. And smart, because you're the coach. You're in charge. Oh, not Kim Mulkey, though. Challenging a 20-year-old on the other team. You should be shoving Angel Reese. That's who I'd like to see you shove. You mean the girl on your team that was pulling her hair earlier? It's classless. Just classless. She wins. But you can win and be classless, can't you? You can win and be classless. Look at North Carolina beating Duke and then going taunting the Cameron Crazies. Well, they had that coming. Did they? You can win and be classless. Winners are classless. Pointing to their watches after games. Yeah. Come on. Kim Mulkey's a great coach. She's clown shoes, too. She's a clown. Clown shoes. After you have that happen, your girl pulls a girl's hair. Your girl commits an intentional foul. The other girl gets mad. Chaos breaks loose. The other team comes over and shoves your girl, and it's the ref's fault. They didn't call enough fouls. That's what they didn't think about where you have to be in terms of hypocrisy as a coach to come out and say it's the referee's fault because they didn't call enough fouls. This is classless. And I went through and looked at it. You know, everybody involved needs to be out for a game. Cardozo, the girl that shoved the other girl unprovoked, look, she got to go for 3. We'll see if the SEC has any stones when it comes to this. Because the smart thing to do is everybody involved in it gets a game. Angel Reese got away with pulling her hair earlier. She gets a game even though she didn't get kicked out. She pulled her hair. We got it on video. Angel Reese gets a game for pulling her hair. The other ones get kicked out for leaving the bench and fighting. And the one that did the shoving gets 3. And you could get in there, I mean, getting in each other's face. There's somebody else in there. The one girl from LSU that got in the girl from South Carolina's face, she could get 2, but 3, everybody else gets 1. And they won't. They should fight. The fact that you're a coach and you're responsible for this, and you come out and say it's the referee's fault, the SEC had any balls, they'd fine her. They'd fine LSU and fine her. They won't. This is a coach that got kicked out of a game earlier this year. They were up 25 points. She's just an ass. A donkey. She's an ass. Here's a winner. But come on. Here's a chance for you to be a decent human being. And look, she doesn't agree with Brittany Griner, a woman. Brittany Griner put her on the map. She's not the head coach of LSU if it's not for Brittany Griner. Doesn't agree with her. Treats her like garbage. Find me somebody in college sports that's more unlikable than Kim Mulkey. An ass. Harp on Sports, the Bar podcast. She just is. And again, it's not a black eye for college, but no. Stop. It's an altercation. It's a fight. You suspend them. Problem here is your coach, not the kids. One of your coaches is a donkey. Come on, SEC. Do the right thing. You won't. Cardozo, 3 games. The rest of them, at least a game. Angel Reese gets a game, even though she didn't get kicked out. Pulling hair. Mulkey should get a game, too. Boy, if they had any stones, I think they'd suspend her for the first round of the NCAA tournament. They won't, though. Harp on Sports, the Bar. Podcast, media, audio, radio network. Follow, share, like, subscribe. At Harp on Sports Twitter. At Harp on Sports Instagram. Harp on Sports Auditory Route. Buzzsprout, Spotify, Apple Podcast. Harp on Sports Facebook page. Harp on Sports YouTube channel. Of course, harponsports.com. Remember, stay clean, stay focused, stay strong. Frankenstein. Have fun with your friends.